Welcome to the latest Callan podcast. Today we're doing a deep dive looking at the Callan blog post, Decarbonization in Real Estate, from compliance risk to investment opportunity. Our mission really is to understand how this prominent theme of decarbonization is reshaping real estate financial risk, and importantly, where the unique investment opportunities might lie, especially for you, the institutional portfolios.
Yeah, and what's really fascinating, I think, is just how quickly carbon risk is financial risk now. I mean, it's not just talk anymore. It's being driven by, a whole new wave of building performance standards, actual binding standards popping up in cities and states globally. Those net zero goals that used to feel, well, kind of aspirational and long dated, now they're becoming real deadlines. They directly influence allocation decisions, and crucially, they carry immediate financial consequences if assets don't comply.
Okay, so let's focus there. These standards. Historically, capital markets didn't pay much attention to energy use, right? But now compliance is becoming mandatory. So what are those immediate financial consequences? What happens to assets that fall short of these new regulatory lines?
Well, the penalties, for one, they might start small, but the expectation is they'll tighten, pretty drastically over time. And that just changes the whole math for owners. Non-compliant properties, they face real risks to their net operating income. Think potential fines piling up. But just as critical, maybe even more so, is the elevated vacancy risk. Tenants, especially the big corporate ones, they're increasingly looking for resilient, low-carbon spaces.
Okay. So it hits NOI and occupancy.
Exactly. And then that, in turn, can make it much harder to access capital for refinancing down the line. Lenders are getting wary.
Right. So for institutional investors like you listening, the question really isn't if you should decarbonize, but more like how.
Yeah.
And how quickly?
That's pretty much it. And institutional capital is definitely poised to play a big role here. The focus now is really on these brown to green transitions. You see strategies concentrating in those major gateway markets, where the regulations are binding and tenant demand for green space is strongest. Priority seems to be on residential and industrial assets right now.
Okay, and here's where I think it gets really interesting, the whole competitive advantage piece. It sounds like it's less about just, marketing a green strategy and more about proving you can actually execute the retrofits, the ones that generate real quantifiable outcomes. What does that execution look like on the ground?
Yeah, that's the core of it. Execution is key. And it's a spectrum, really. You've got sort of the lighter retrofits first, things like upgrading to LED lighting, maybe installing smart meters, HVAC tune-ups. Often you can do those while tenants are still in place, which helps maintain some interim income.
Okay, the low-hanging fruit, so to speak.
Kind of. But then you have the deep, what you might call transformative retrofits. That's the bigger lift. That's where you're replacing old fossil fuel systems with, say, efficient heat pumps, putting in high-performance windows, maybe integrating on-site renewables like solar.
Right, the stuff that really moves the needle on emissions.
Exactly. But these are capital-intensive. And importantly, they usually require the building to be vacant, or at least partially vacant. That's the immediate trade-off investors have to weigh up.
And that brings us right back to that natural tension for the investor, doesn't it? Balancing those big capital outlays for the deep upgrades against the potential dilution of immediate returns. How are managers reconciling that? The cost versus the environmental impact, especially when there isn't really a single standardized framework yet.
That is the key tension. You're right. And alignment is crucial. One potential path we're seeing discussed, mentioned in the Callan blog post, is actually linking carried interest, linking it directly to measurable reductions in carbon emissions.
Interesting. So tying financial reward directly to sustainability progress.
Precisely. It ensures the manager's incentives match up with actual, verifiable sustainability outcomes.
But wait, how do you stop managers from just, greenwashing those numbers, making them look better than they are?
Well, that's exactly the challenge, isn't it? That alignment only works if the metrics are robust. They need to be clear, consistently measured, and ideally third-party verified. The goal has to be shifting focus from inputs like how much money was spent to outputs like how much carbon was actually reduced. It needs real teeth.
Okay, that makes sense. So let's say the asset goes through this transition successfully. It's compliant, it's resilient. Where's the exit? Who's buying these assets once the heavy lifting is done?
Well, the European market actually gives us a pretty useful precedent here. You look at the Article 9 funds, defined under the EU's Sustainable Finance Disclosure Regulation, or SFDR. These funds, their explicit investment objective is sustainability. They are set up as dedicated, often long-term buyers, specifically looking for energy-efficient, low-carbon buildings.
Article 9 funds, right. And is there real scale there?
Oh, absolutely. The scale is already significant. We're talking nearly 1,000 of these funds today, managing well over 300 billion in assets. And that demand is largely driven by institutional investors. Now, real estate is still a relatively small slice of that pie today, but it clearly shows the direction capital is flowing. There's dedicated money seeking out these sustainable, resilient holdings.
So, wrapping this up, what does this all mean for you listening? Well, this deep dive really confirms that decarbonization isn't just a side issue anymore. It's fast becoming a core consideration for safeguarding long-term value. It's about ensuring your real estate assets stay liquid, stay financeable under this growing regulatory and market scrutiny.
Yeah, the key takeaway I think is that the future resilience of real estate portfolios really hinges on strategically focusing that institutional capital, focusing it on tangible, measurable execution. That's how you turn what looks like compliance risk into a genuine, potentially quite durable investment opportunity.